Welcome back. It's our third topic that we're speaking with Amanda McConkie, a health promoter at the Community Health Centers of Northumberland, Arlene Alexander, our social worker from Northumberland Hills Hospital, and Jane Spencer, our nurse practitioner, also from the Community Health Centers of Northumberland. Welcome back. Thank you so much for agreeing to this third interview. And today, I'd like to build on what we've already talked about, which was social inclusion, brain health, activities that seniors can participate in, housing, and how that affects our social inclusion, our possibilities of social inclusion. And today, I'd like to talk a little bit about climate change. And I know that sounds like an odd segue to talk about climate change in seniors. But I think we know that climate change is here and it's here to stay. And seniors are one of our, quote, vulnerable populations. Jane, I wonder if I could start with you in terms of the risks of extreme weather on seniors and their health.
Okay, well, let's just look outside today. I smell like smoke. My car smells like smoke. I'm feeling a little raspy. So I can see that, you know, how this would affect seniors with respiratory illnesses, anybody with cardiac issues, obesity, lack of physical, you know, aptitude. I think they would have a difficult time getting out. And again, it's one more reason why they're staying shut in. The winter would be another one. If we end up, you know, getting harsher winters here, like we'll see in other cities, particularly in this area, because our transportation issue really is fairly poor.
Yes.
To get seniors out when they need to get out. So again, it's kind of like that trajectory. They're not getting out, staying inside, depression, anxiety, no physical activity, not eating well, which again, just increases the risk of different medical issues. So I think if you're thinking climate change, you have to think transportation. How are we getting people out?
Agreed. Transportation is critical. I'm especially thinking about water quality. I'm also thinking about power when a grid fails because of whatever terrible thing that's happening. You know, seniors are particularly vulnerable if they don't have access to electricity. So their air conditioning doesn't work, or their heat doesn't work, or their refrigerator dies and they can't, you know, eat the food that's left. I think all of those things are really, really difficult issues to deal with. And I'm wondering, Arlene, as a social worker, when you think about how do you protect people when we know that the climate is going to change significantly, and we know that vulnerable people, that includes children, of course, but children usually have parents who at least are active and can look after them. How do you protect people? And how do you provide the information that they need? How do you communicate to them what to do when the climate is now extreme? When, you know, for instance, on the phone today, I was getting alerts of pollution. I was hearing that, you know, there are problems and don't go out and put your air filters on, and how to build a cheap air filter over a fan. So how do we get the information out to this vulnerable population and even the not vulnerable? I think, you know, should, when my power went out over Christmas, it was awful, you know, 10 hours with nothing, and it just drove me nuts. So how can we communicate some strategies to adapt?
So I think some of the strategies that I've utilized in the past in bringing awareness to seniors about this issue would be mouth-to-mouth, just speaking with them on the phone or speaking to them face-to-face, creating posters for them. Also, for those who are computer savvy, sending out emails to them about, you know, the dangers of going outside when it's really hot and what they should do when they, if they have to go out, like, you know, hydrating themselves and wearing cool clothing, you know, mm-hmm. walking with an umbrella, you know, sun lotion and all those sort of things. things that I would use to provide information and awareness to them. And their family also can be a huge ally in providing reminders to them as well.
Yeah, if their family lives close by. Jane, I'm wondering about, not only do we need to have a communication pipeline, as Arlene was suggesting, but we also need our own individual emergency kit of people. People who can help seniors to cope with what they're experiencing, but also to protect them somehow, and as you say, transport them somehow if they need to move out of where they are and into a safer place. How do we build that emergency kit of not only resources, but human resources?
Yes, that's almost like a larger version of a phone tree. So here at the CHC, we have sort of an emergency phone tree. So it would possibly be a larger version of that. One of the things that in Northumberland we've had is the pilot program for the community paramedics. And so we'll refer some of our patients to the community paramedic program, and they will go in and, you know, assess falls risk, assess, you know, vital signs, just assess general well-being. And that to me would be maybe the top of that pyramid is having them go in and just say, hey, can you go check on this patient? We're worried about the weather, worried about whatever. And they're amazing. Like they'll go in, no problem. And just assess those patients. And again, a lot of that is social. So if you're thinking of some kind of a community pyramid, I think they would have to be involved.
Yeah, agreed. And I would guess that the firefighters and the police would also benefit from some kind of training around climate change and seniors and, you know, how to be involved in an emergency situation where you had to not only inform, but transport people as well. Because I think, you know, I hate to be a doomsday person, but you're right. The smoke today is making me a little worried that we aren't even seeing the tip of the iceberg yet. We for some reason think that it'll all work out, you know, it'll clear it up and things will be fine, and it will. But we know that statistically, we know that from the research that climate change is going to be more and more dangerous for us. And I see that as a looming problem for an aging population.
If we can think about climate change for sure, but if you think about these communities and what we've seen happen, I think it's Ohio. We have 100 trains going through this community carrying all kinds of stuff. Right? So we've seen those train accidents in the U.S. and we have chemical. So we talk about weather, but you have to also bring in these other, you know, potentially disastrous issues that could happen.
A very good point. Very, very good point. I had not actually thought of that. But of course, if the power goes out in the hospital, it becomes a problem. I know they have backup generators, but I don't know how long those last either. So, I don't think we've even touched really on what could happen and how we could deal with this. I wonder, does the municipality communicate with the health center about disasters and how to deal with disasters? Is that something on their agenda?
We've had a discussion, I think, years ago, and we do have sort of a disaster, don't we, Mandy? Some kind of a disaster plan tree. And we did discuss the trains and Cameco as one of the issues. So I'm assuming that they would, through the mayor's office, they would have to have something in collaboration with police and fire and healthcare.
That's I hope so. I'm sure they do. Uh-huh. I'm uh-huh. feeling quite confident that they do. But I'm wondering now, how do we get a lot of information out quickly to our senior population. Obviously, you have lists and emails of your membership. And the last interview I did was with the University of Waterloo, their Intact Center on Climate Adaptation. And they've created a number of really easy to follow infographics. And I think those might be valuable for the community health center to make available to their patient list, to their client list, so that they know what they can do in the house to keep it cool, keep it warm, their food, how to keep it safe, when to go outside, when not to go outside, that sort of thing. These infographics are really useful, and the university has made them available. They are not asking for, you don't need permission, you just, they want people to use them because they feel that this is a really important way to communicate to a community, to a population base. I'm wondering, before we end this conversation, if we could talk a little bit more about our resources in our community. If you could just highlight some of the resources that you provide, and also what you know the community provides. If we could start with you, Amanda, what are the resources out in the community? Apart from the center itself, which has activities, if you would like to talk a little bit about the things that you provide.
Yeah, so one of the main parts of my role, as Jane kind of spoke, is it's called social prescribing. So I help connect people to various social and wellness resources in the community, from food to exercise, to social connection, to transportation. So it's all over the place. So we work with a lot of different, organizations, to help also financially support clients. So community care is amazing in the community, if people aren't aware, from the food services they offer, to the home support services, to their friendly check-ins, to their exercise classes that are free as well. And we connect people a lot to the senior centers as well, Ruth Clark, the YMCA, and, you know, supporting just other kind of local communities and things. But my role is kind of, I have a bit of a hut, like a resource folder at work, right? And so when I meet with people or people ask, I do my best to try to dig deeper and find, because I understand, not just for seniors, for everybody, that sometimes finding information is really hard. Mm-hmm. Like, even on the internet, it might be there, but it's not there. Mm-hmm. So I try my best to kind of help do that for clients that are in need.
That's a new thing, social prescribing.
Mm-hmm. So it came from the UK. And then our alliance, which is kind of we're a member of, they really took it and have kind of spread it and worked with other community health centers and nurse practitioner like clinics and Aboriginal centers in Ontario. And so we're doing that. We're initiating that at our center. And it just helps it's that little extra piece, right? So for our providers like Jane, who can't spend that extra time, then they can make the social prescription and we can help make those connections for clients. And if they need financial support, we can find ways to help financially support that as well.
Okay. So Jane, as a nurse practitioner, how do you use the social prescribing? How does that work when a patient comes in to see you?
When a patient comes in to see me, well, we'll have the discussion, ask the questions, and then we have it right on our platform, our EMR platform. And so I can just tick a box and all of the social prescribing elements come up, and I'll tick off exercise, I'll tick off volunteer, I'll tick off needs more information. And that's when I just say, look, like, this is just, you're just doing some information gathering. Have a talk with Mandy or one of the other women that work in that department and just see if anything kind of, you know, resonates with you. Come in and try it. And then I also talk a little bit about the paramedic program as a means of having another connection. Yes. We talk a little bit about maybe going to some of the library close by, and then the food banks, which is another aspect of, you know, the whole social.
So you talked about a lot of different community resources there. Arlene, How do all of the resources in the community also know about the social prescribing and participate actively in this?
I think that a lot of people are quite aware of. Yes, I think a lot of people are aware, but for me, I just started this role February 1st. So I'm still learning about the community resources that are available. So this is something when I'm seeing my patients upon discharge that I'll be telling them about, because I learned something today, right? But even in my own role, some of the resources that I would refer patients to would be the Help Center. They offer some really great services, like families or older adults may have challenges with filling out forms, right? And those are things that they can get assistance with at the Help Center. We have an offsite mental health services at the hospital. They can access that too for older seniors who are having challenges with anxiety, depression, things like that. These services are there and can be utilized.
Okay, a final question, Jane. Do you work collaboratively with the Y, for instance, with their programming that they do for seniors? Do they seek you out in terms of social prescribing and what they could do as an organization to facilitate that activity?
That would probably go to Mandy.
That would go to Mandy.
Yeah, that would be more her role. I'd just defer you, to that.
You say these are the things that are available. Now go see Mandy. So Mandy, do you work collaboratively with all of those other organizations?
I try my best. Yeah. So another project which I've tried to entice the Ruth Clark, and I'm saying this, on radio, maybe they'll hear. And the YMCA is a Links to Wellbeing project. So that's with the Ontario Association of Older Adults, and it's connected to senior centers. So it's where providers and allied health professionals can refer their clients to their local senior center, and there's funding in place for it. So it's like, win-win. So yes. And then we also help to promote, they have a great, it's called Upturn, I believe is the name at the YMCA right now. And it's like, a free membership for 3 months for individuals who are really dealing with like mental health issues and things like that. So we really do try to see what's going on. And then I try to reach out and make connections and sometimes pester a little bit because I'm good at that and just be like, hey, try to get things moving and going, because that's my role. And as a community health center, like, we just really want to help our clients make sure they get connected and make sure they don't fall off the grid, right? That they don't fall off. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the connectivity needs to happen, obviously, because different groups are always creating new programming, new ideas are coming forward. And so the more you can collaborate, the stronger the community will be as a whole, and the more benefit to our aging population, for sure. Just to end on a interesting note, I think we're now at 50% of our population over the age of 55 in the county. So that's a lot of aging. That's a big aging demographic. And so it makes your job really critical, because, there are not an overwhelming number of supports or agencies that do work with an aging population. And when it's as large as ours, and it can only get bigger as people keep aging, I think what you do is of critical importance. And thank you for participating today. Yes, Jane.
I have one more thing to say, and yes. I think it just doesn't come up in conversation, but it probably should, is that some of the biggest risks are older immigrants. We've got a lot of new Canadians coming in. From Ukraine, from Afghanistan, Syria, and the older population are being left. And we can't forget lesbian, gay, bisexual, especially this month, because of their feeling of discrimination. Mm-hmm. And they're basically, they're barriers to healthcare, perceived or otherwise. So I think those groups need to be brought in as well in these discussions.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that. Of course, every group, there should be no exclusion to the services that we provide. And some of our older adults have perhaps more unique issues that they're dealing with because of language barriers or becoming a new immigrant. I know that that's trauma. To leave your country and come to another one is traumatic in itself. So thank you for bringing that up. And again, thank you for participating, Arlene. Thank you, Amanda. And thank you, Jane. You've been most insightful. And I'm glad that we were able to have this discussion. And I'm glad that the local area and the outside area will be able to hear this discussion as well. So thank you so much for participating.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much.